Listen for Insight, a podcast from Miami University's Lockheed Martin Leadership Institute dedicated to spreading ideas of creativity, innovation, and leadership.
This podcast focuses on transformational leadership. There may be mentions to Lockheed or the Institute during the episode. This is in reference to the Lockheed Martin Leadership Institute, a three-year transformational leadership development program at Miami University. Jessica Schmidt is an alumni of the Institute and is being interviewed by Zane Shreve, a current member.
Hello?
Hey, this is Zane from the Lockheed Martin Leadership Institute.
Yep.
Really excited to get to talk to you.
Oh.
Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, no problem. I learned a lot from the Leadership Institute, so anything I can do to give back is great.
Awesome. Well, let's get started. So my first question for you, what have been some of your biggest learnings since graduating and since you started your professional career?
For me personally, a lot of it has just been learning how to take a step back and not be so hard on myself. I was a bit of a perfectionist, as plenty of others I knew in college were. You know, it was all about getting an A on the next exam, next paper, and you got that report card in the semester, and life was good. That's all you needed. It's obviously not nearly as simple in the real world, but I still kind of went into it thinking I could be, you know, a straight A student, which equated to, you know, perfect work, and I'll have everything done on time, and it'll be great, no problem. It's just not that easy, and the more you volunteer for more work, the more work they will give you, and to the point that you can't get it all done. And it's not all going to be perfect because you're new and you're just still learning. So that was a big adjustment for me. So learning how to not be so hard on myself, learning how to take criticism without getting, you know, emotionally affected by it or letting it bother me. I've gotten a lot tougher. You know, you don't really get, there's not that much conflict in a school environment. But since I've started working at Procter & Gamble, they've been undergoing a lot of change in just the way they do work and the way teams are structured. And it's been a very challenging time for the plant. So there's been a lot of conflict associated with all of that change, which, again, it's made me grow a lot. It's been hard at times, but I'm very grateful for it because it's made me a much better employee and person.
Is there a specific leader in your field, your workplace, that inspires you? And if so, why?
Yes. The first guy that comes to mind for me is Tim Miller. So Tim Miller, when I first started at P&G, he was a machine leader. So I don't know how much you know about paper making. I know obviously Miami has a program. So paper machines are huge. One machine, you know, it's like $300 million worth of capital. You've got 30 some people that run that work on just running that machine round the clock 24/7, including most holidays. And if that machine goes down, every hour that's down is thousands and thousands of dollars of loss reduction. So a machine leader's job is literally to lead that machine, keep it from going down unexpectedly, keep a good product coming off, high quality, low cost, all of those things. They have a lot of responsibility. It's a huge important role. That said, most machine leaders are, some of them come from a technician base, which at my job, so the machine leader I'm talking about, his name is Tim. He's just hourly paid employee, started at Procter & Gamble just looking for a paycheck, never sought to get a promotion, didn't want to move, didn't need any credit, but he was a very, very hard worker. He learned very quickly and paid a lot of attention. So he got people sought him out to give him bigger roles because he did really well in everything they gave him. So what I learned from him, so he was 60-something when I met him. He actually just retired a year ago. He had so much respect. Everyone talks about Tim Miller like he's some sort of god. And wherever he goes, they've moved him from different machines. That machine slowly transforms into the number one machine in the category. So clearly it's something Tim is doing, not just he's been given easy machines. In fact, he's turned around machines from being some of the worst to the best. But when you meet him, he is the most humble guy I've ever met. He says there's nothing secret to what he does. He just comes in and does his job, simple as that. He knows so much, but he's never arrogant or cocky. He will happily teach. He loves teaching and showing people. he has a lot of respect from everyone who works for him, which I think is a big part of what made him successful. His teams admire him and they listen to what he has to say. He doesn't need to be forceful. If he asks you to do something or suggest something, people really take that and run with it because they respect him and they want to do good for him because he treats them well with a lot of respect. And this is a hourly paid guy who's not looking for any attention, but he got a lot just because of the type of person he was. And that really impacted me and kind of reminded me to stay humble and work hard without looking for anything in return and what kind of dividends that can actually give you.
And I think that's something that that we've really touched on in the Leadership Institute is kind of that idea of not everybody who's a leader is in a leadership position. You know, it's the way that you act, the way that you do your job, and obviously the way that others respond to that and kind of the influence that you can have on the others that really defines what a leader is.
It was really cool to watch. You'd watch him go to a meeting and people, there's a lot of big talkers in P&G and people who like to dominate the room. And Tim would sit quietly in the corner for 35 minutes. And then finally at the end, he'd calmly say his 2 cents. And oftentimes that kind of changed the course and he distilled all the information and gave it back and didn't force it on anyone. But usually he was the one we ended up listening to. It was just really eye-opening. I've never seen anyone lead that way before.
How can individual team members who maybe aren't in leadership positions act as leaders? You kind of touched on that earlier.
I remember Professor Mormon talking about this kind of stuff too, and I don't know if I ever fully believed how true it was, but as simple as it is to just show up on time, be fully engaged, and deliver what you say you're going to deliver on time, I mean, that alone can take you a long way. As sad as you think that must be a given, but everyone out there gets so caught up with so many different priorities, and it's hard to keep your plate manageable. Don't bite off more than you can chew, but then deliver on everything you say you're going to deliver and respond to emails. I know that's one of her keys as well. Respond to emails. Don't ignore things. Make sure you actually read. I mean, that still drives people at P&G crazy too when you send out a bunch of emails about something important and people just say they're not reading their emails. It is critical to just do simple things like that. But then again, most teams are probably implementing some sort of change. But again, change is really hard, and I'm seeing a lot of that now. So embracing change, even when it seems like it's going to be painful, that goes a long way, maintaining a good attitude and, you know, moving forward.
So kind of from the flip side of that, what are some effective ways for a leader to motivate the members of a team?
I'm sure it's different in a lot of places. This is somewhat universal, but the biggest thing I've seen at P&G is to just get to know the people on your team as people, not just as employees. Get to know them as people, build a good personal relationship, and prove yourself trustworthy. And, you know, care about that person and let them know that you do care about that person. The leadership at my plant has a lot of turnover, so new managers like me come and go, and they often start out very skeptical. Like, I get, you know, a crew of guys running the machine who are 30 years older than me on average, seeing a bunch of new managers come in. So it takes the patience of getting to know them, letting them get to know me, building the trust. Once I've built that trust in them and they believe in me and they know that I care and I do want to make things better for them, even if I'm going to temporarily install a change that's going to be annoying, I am doing it for a greater good. So once they build that trust, and it does take months, that makes everything a world of difference and it's so much easier to get things done. I've been moved around a lot on different projects, so I'm on my fourth boss right now in a little over 2 years. I've been joking that they just keep trying to get rid of me, but hopefully that's not actually the case. But I've learned a lot already about, you know, you can tell difference sometimes and someone really digs deeper and wants to know who you are and what you want, takes the time to care about you as a person. I know the leaders who've done that really well for me made me want to work harder for them. And when I felt like they saw some potential in me and they wanted me to do well, I wanted to prove them right. So I worked extra hard on anything they requested to, you know, prove that they were right in believing in me. And seeing that in myself makes me remind to do that with other people. Do believe in them and trust in them, and then they'll want to prove you right. If you're really skeptical and, you know, don't, all you're looking for is the bottom line, that's not going to get you very far.
Right. And that kind of goes along with the way that just kind of setting that example of of the type of, you know, when the leader sets the example and the followers can kind of mimic that as opposed to the leader barking orders from the top down. In what ways does your specific industry or your specific workplace influence your work and leadership style?
So my industry is much different than I expected to be in when I joined engineering. I mean, quite honestly, I don't know why, but I assumed I'd work in some sort of office because my parents worked in office. They're not engineers, but they just, I grew up in a pretty...
That's where people work.
I grew up in a pretty white-collar community, so I just assumed that I could wear skirts to work and, you know, look nice every day. In reality, I wear steel-toed boots to work every day. I wear safety glasses. My hair has to be up in a bun. And it's big machinery. And again, a lot of the employees there are 30 years older than I am. It's very blue collar in Wisconsin. It's very, very male. It's much different than I ever expected with the kind of, you have to show a willingness to get dirty. So, I mean, that's something, quite frankly, part of my leadership and credibility with a lot of these employees was proving that I had no problem climbing into the machine and getting slimy some days. That gained me a lot of respect. That's something we'd never talk about. It all depends on where you're working. But being sensitive to the culture, I mean, that's something no one told me this, but I just kind of could watch over time and seeing if new managers weren't very interested in getting dirty and, you know, showing they really cared, I could see that change in how they were treated by the technician base. To be really sensitive to things like that, I think, and just adjust and tweak. I mean, I probably, with the technicians, I'm not saying I'm, you know, crude, but I'm not quite as polished because that's easier for them to relate to and they like that better than someone who's very proper and, you know, assigned. That's how it's changed in mine. I mean, I'm sure it would change if I worked in a P&G corporate office. If I get moved to headquarters, I'm sure obviously that would completely change that, how I kind of hold myself depending on the situation.
I actually kind of have a similar story to that. So I worked at in the die casting industry this past summer for an internship, which is, you know, kind of similar, like big, heavy machinery, you know, loud, dirty, hot, safety glasses. Safety glasses, steel toes, and 100% cotton shirts. And I kind of had I feel like for me personally, I had a good experience because the previous summer, I had just been working the line. You know, I was on the plant floor running the machines, came back the next year as an engineering intern. And just kind of having that experience before, I think, really helped me in that communication, kind of that, you know, less polished interaction.
Line leaders, I mean, in fact, I think I've mentioned before, machine leaders, they're often either new managers or technicians who've kind of been tapped by management and asked to lead. But some of those technicians who kind of rose through the ranks, those end up being a lot of the best line leaders our plant has because they know both sides of it and they're really great at, they understand the equipment and they understand what it's like to run it. So they're much better at communicating all that. And
so last question here. What are some specific roadblocks that you would kind of suggest others look out for when they're on the journey of transformational leadership?
From my experience, for me, it was actually just being too hard on myself. It comes back to, again, I think the perfectionist tendencies and wanting to hit the ground running and be great right from the get-go. But it's really hard. And again, I got moved around to a lot of different projects. So every about 6 months so far, I've been moved. And I'm told that's a reflection of good things that I'm moving around, trying new things, and they want to move me to where they've got problems. But it also, it's really hard to move every 6 months because you have to learn a whole new segment of operation. So about a year ago, I actually remember just being so burnt out. I had taken on more than I could chew. I was trying too hard to get everything just right and thinking that I had to get to the bottom of my to-do list every day and just completely burnt myself out. Thought, look, I'm way too emotional. I can't do this. This is just proof. You know, I need to just quit engineering maybe and find another career path. Luckily, I never came quite, obviously, to that drastic measures, but it took me a while to really stop being so hung up on getting it all just right. I found some people at work I trusted and talked to them about all my crazy anxiety, and they were the ones, again, Jessica, you can't be so hard on yourself. You're still learning. You're doing a good job, and you have to accept that you're not going to get it all right. You have to be satisfied with just making a good effort. And there's plenty of days that everyone, the best employees, are not going to get to the bottom of the to-do list. They're going to be a little behind on certain things. And that's just part of life. And you can't get hung up on that. Honestly, I would say once I got past those tendencies on my end and stopped being so hard on myself, started just focusing on making progress every day without getting it just right every day, and realizing I was probably never going to get to the bottom of my to-do list, but just keep chipping away at it. That made a world of difference in my ability. Actually, I got more productive once I stopped worrying about being not productive enough. Kind of funny the way that works out. This is Jessica Schmidt. Thank you for listening for Insight.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Listen for Insight, a part of Miami Ideas. Tune in next time for more insights on creativity, innovation, and leadership. Siesta by Gisar is licensed under AI.